I don't know about you, but it's been a bit of a week. Maybe I should say it's been a bit of a month. Maybe even a year, I don't know. On Friday, many of you were here as we remembered the life of Barb Boyt. Tomorrow's the service for Pastor Elaine's father, Roy. And we've experienced a lot of loss recently. And we are all grieving these losses in different ways. A couple of weeks ago, when I asked Elaine if I should put the sermon in my back pocket to have ready as needed, and she said yes, I'd been thinking about the phrase in Psalm 46, "There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God." I was thinking that this phrase seems to possibly point towards something for us in our rebuilding time at Walmer. And that means I picked this psalm without really thinking about the season of loss we're in. But in the psalm, we're reminded that God is our refuge and strength. And I hope that this also speaks into our loss, as well as potentially speaking into our journey into the future. So we're looking together at Psalm 46, as Elaine read for you. And I'm reading from the NRSV. I will refer to other translations through the morning, and there are Bibles around if you want to look it up. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of the city. It shall not be moved. God will help it when the morning dawns. The nations are in an uproar. The kingdoms totter. He utters his voice. The earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Come, behold the works of the Lord. See what desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. This psalm, Psalm 46, is a really tightly structured poem. The psalmist used a variety of literary devices in structuring the psalm, including metaphor, alliteration, and parallelism. Repeated words connect different parts of the poem. Now, poetry can be difficult to read, and I'm not always the biggest fan. But close reading of poems often reward close attention, close reading. So the first part of this sermon is a close reading of this poem that points out the poem's structure and some of the literary devices used. So the psalm has three sections separated from one another by the word selah, a term which is a technical, probably musical term that occurs in many psalms. You notice when Elaine read it, she didn't read the word. I read the word. And it kind of goes back and forth whether people vocalize selah or not on reading a poem. There are many suggestions as to its meaning. We just don't know for sure quite what it means. So three sections separated by the word selah. The first connector between the sections is the repeated use of the word earth. Once in each of the first two sections, in verse 2, though the earth should change, and in verse 6, the earth melts. In the third section, earth is repeated in verses 8, 9, and 10. That's all the verses in the third section of the psalm, except that repeated refrain. The second connector between the sections is the repeated theme of God's protection and presence with his people. The first section, verses 1 to 3, begins with a statement of God's protection and presence. The second and third sections end with a repeated refrain which reiterates this theme. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. So there's the two connections, the connecting word, earth, and the connecting idea, God's protection. And together, these suggest that one of the themes of this psalm might be our protection on earth. So we can see if this hypothesis, that this might be a theme, holds up as we continue. Verses 1 to 3 make up the first section of the psalm. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth should change, though the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. Hebrew poetry uses a literary device called parallelism. Succeeding lines and half lines of a poem repeat and build on words and ideas. So in the first verse, a very present help in trouble expands what the psalmist means by calling God our refuge and strength. So a very present help, present part is not just in time, present in time, but also present as in near, present in space. God is very near in trouble. Verses 2 and 3 are closely linked by the repeated shaking and trembling of the mountains and the roaring and tumult of the seas. And that seems to suggest that there's an earthquake and potentially a tsunami coming out of the earthquake. Now, the sea is often a metaphor for chaos in Scripture. So this section of the psalm seems to assert that God protects his people from the chaos of natural catastrophes, and reminds us that God's good created order emerged from chaos. God, Elohim, who created the earth, is our refuge and strength through the trouble of earth-shaking events which seem out of control. Verses 4 through 7 are the second section of the psalm. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of the city. It shall not be moved. God will help it when the morning dawns. The nations are in an uproar. The kingdoms totter. He utters his voice. The earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. In these verses, a city with a river, nations, and kingdoms are introduced. In verse 5, God helps the city just as God is our help. Though the earth and mountains moved in the first section, the city doesn't move. The nations and kingdoms, however, are a different story. The kingdoms totter, and the verb used is the same one used as the mountains in verse 2, and it can also be translated as slide. The mountains slide into the heart of the sea, the kingdoms slide around. So this section of the psalm portrays God as the protector of his people in international or national crises. Though nations are in an uproar and kingdoms slide, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And verses 8 to 11 make up the third and final section of the psalm. Come, behold the works of the Lord. See what desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. So these verses combine the idea of God's protection in the context of both natural and national crises. God does deeds inspiring awe, wonders, or desolations on the earth, and causes wars to cease. God is exalted both among the nations and in the earth. We notice that God doesn't fight wars, but makes wars cease. He does not use the weapons of war, but destroys them. Verse 10, be still and know that I am God, is often used as a call to meditation or worship. And We used it that way this morning in our service. We often tend to forget the imagery of war that surrounds the verse. Be still are the words of the Lord of hosts to those who oppose him. Stop. Don't even try to fight me. Know that I am God. At the same time, these words can be heard by those who seek the protection of the God of Jacob. Relax and know that I am God, your refuge. So how do these three sections of the psalm fit together? First, it could be argued that the first section of the psalm is oriented toward the past. It focuses on creation with the earthquakes and the tsunami-like events. It reminds us that God created the world and his creator is in control of the seas and the chaos they represent. So the first section, oriented toward the past, potentially. God created the world. The second part of the psalm introduces a city, kingdoms, and nations. And this reminds us that God controls history, what happens in the world from day to day, in the present. The third part of the psalm looks to the future, when wars will cease, when God will be exalted over the nations and over the earth. So this progress, from the past to present to future, gives this psalm an end times or an eschatological structure. So it's moving from the past to the future. The second way the sections fit together is this use of the repeated refrain, particularly in the second and third sections of the psalm, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. So I'm going to unpack that refrain for a minute. So the Lord of hosts means the Lord of armies. A host is an army. In the Message, Eugene Peterson translates Yahweh Sabaoth instead of the Lord of hosts. He says, God of the angel armies, which has kind of got a nice ring to it. But note that the Lord of the armies, the Lord of hosts, is not just Lord of the angel armies, but the Lord of all earthly armies as well. This name for God implies ultimate power and control over all armies. And if the Lord of hosts is not with a particular army, they have no hope. So when it's used in the Hebrew Bible, it's often used either as the Lord of hosts is with the armies of Israel, or with Israel's enemies in judgment against Israel. Okay, so it can be used both ways. So Yahweh Sabaoth, Lord of hosts, is used, found in the Hebrew Bible 285 times, and it's mostly in the prophets and a little in the Psalms, as here. So in this refrain of Psalm 46, the Lord of hosts is paralleled with the God of Jacob. Remember that when they're in parallel, they're either expanding on or just kind of reinforcing each other. The phrase the God of Jacob is only found 16 times in the Hebrew Bible, not counting the times it's found in the cluster, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God of Jacob, 16 times, so it's fairly rare. It's primarily found in the Psalms in the context of God as protector of his people. Jacob had two visions of God, one when he was traveling alone from his parents' home in the land of promise to his relatives in Syria, and the other on his return journey with a large household. In the first vision, when he's alone and leaving his parents' home, Jacob saw a ladder between heaven and earth with angels going up and down the ladder. And in the vision, God told Jacob he would protect him as he traveled. In Jacob's second encounter with God, he wrestled with a stranger all night. And finally, the stranger blessed him at dawn and changed his name to Israel, the one who wrestles with God. In the Message, Eugene Peterson associates the second encounter with the phrase, the God of Jacob. He translates the phrase Elohi Yaakov as Jacob wrestling God. Because God of Jacob is paralleled with the Lord of hosts, I tend to associate Jacob's vision of the ladder and angels and the promise of protection with God of Jacob. But God's protection of Jacob is evident throughout his story. The Lord of hosts is the God of Jacob. The God who protected Jacob, who wrestled with Jacob, is present with God's people and is a refuge for them. Fitting together the pieces of this poem, one message for us today is that in the face of natural or national chaos, in the past, present, or in the future, the God of angel armies is with us. Our refuge is the God of Jacob. So what about this end times direction in the structure of the poem? And what about the city and the river in verse 4, the unshakable city with a river whose streams make the city of God glad? How does that fit in with all the chaos and disaster and protection? There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of it. It shall not be moved. God will help it when the morning dawns. So in my notes around this psalm, I have these two questions. What is this river? And what and where is the city of God? One thing to notice about the river in the city in verse 4 is the water brings rejoicing to the city. And this is a contrast to the chaos and destruction of the water of the sea in the first section of the psalm. Instead of chaos, mountains crumbling, tidal waves, the city's river brings joy, and the city is unmoved. God lives there. The waters of the city's river bring life. In Psalm 65, we also read about life-giving waters, streams that water the ground so that crops flourish and food is provided for people and animals. The river in the city, the river that brings joy, is water that brings life, that brings flourishing. Because the city is where God lives, when this psalm was written, everyone would understand that the city was Jerusalem. Well, which river, you may be asking? Which river did the psalmist mean? Which river in Jerusalem brought gladness to the city? And I've seen some commentators try to pick out which river it is, being very literal in the reading of the psalm. But it's been suggested that an actual river might not be the best understanding of the psalm. Rather, the river was a metaphor for God's presence in the city, which is also described as the holy habitation of the Most High. The idea of the river referring to the presence of God is reinforced because the psalm has a future direction implied in its structure. The future redeemed city described in Ezekiel has a river flowing out of the temple, the dwelling place of God, the building that was the holy habitation of the Most High. In Ezekiel 47, we read that the prophet Ezekiel saw a vision of a new temple in a city on a high mountain. He was given a guided tour of this new temple by a man whose appearance shone like bronze. I'm going to read you some verses that describe the river the prophet saw flowing from the temple. Then he brought me back to the entrance of the temple. There, water was flowing from, behold, the threshold of the temple toward the east, for the temple faced east. And the water was flowing down from below the south end of the threshold of the temple, south of the altar. Then he brought me out by way of the north gate and led me around to the outer gate that faces toward the east. And the water was coming out on the south side. Going on eastward with a cord in his hand, the man measured 1,000 cubits and then led me through the water, and it was ankle deep. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, and it was knee deep. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water. It was up to the waist. Again, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not cross, for the water had risen. It was deep enough to swim in, a river that could not be crossed. He said to me, "Mortal, have you seen this?" Then he led me back along the bank of the river. As I came back, I saw on the bank of the river a great many trees to one side and the other. He said to me, "This water flows toward the eastern river, eastern region, and goes down into the Arabah. And where it enters the sea of stagnant waters, the water will become fresh. Wherever the river goes, every living creature that swims will live. And there will be very many fish once these waters reach there. It will become fresh, and everything will live where the river goes. On the banks, on both sides of the river, there will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, nor their fruit fail, but they will bear fresh fruit every month, because the water for them flows from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for healing." And then from Revelation 22, hear the vision of John. Then the angel showed me the river of the water of life, bright as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb through the middle of the street of the city. On either side of the river is the tree of life, with its 12 kinds of fruit, producing its fruit each month. And the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. So the vision of our future is of a redeemed city, a city with a river flowing with the water of life. I'm still working on what that means for us living in the city of Toronto in the 21st century, that the Christian vision of the last times is urban, a redeemed city with God in her midst. I've been looking around at some books on urban mission, and in one of them there's this quote that I think kind of draws together this the ideas of cities in Scripture that we've talked about and thought about over the years here at Walmer. To some extent, the welfare of any city, writes the author of this book, is connected with the willingness of God's people to live there and follow the pattern of incarnation and service which Jesus showed. In one sense, Christians should be pilgrims like Abraham with no abiding city, stressing instead their citizenship of heaven. Yet, like the exiles in Babylon, they are called to settle down and work for the welfare of their cities, as instructed by Jeremiah. For us today, this involves both a verbal witness to Jesus Christ and a life full of community service, social action, and political passion for justice and truth. Here at Walmer, we're working on figuring out what God is calling us to do as we work on revitalization and the rebuilding of our church. How do we work for the welfare of our city so that in some way the water of life, the river that brings joy, begins to flow in Toronto? I don't think that we're being called to such enormous things that will necessarily bring news, be newsworthy, or shake the city up. But in some way, how do we work for the welfare of our city so that in some way the water of life, the river that brings joy, begins to flow in Toronto? Or how do we add our stream to this river, which is probably already flowing in Toronto? As you reflect on this psalm, Psalm 46, I encourage you this week to have at least one conversation with someone about the specific ways our congregation is being called to bring peace, or shalom, to our city. Like I said, I don't think we're being called to change the whole city, but I think God has something in mind for us as we look for guidance for our future here at Walmer and Lowther. What does it mean to be Jesus here? How do we help others find their refuge and strength in God? How can God's presence flow from us so that our neighborhood flourishes?